Hey y'all, I'm Whitney Scarborough, the host of Wits End. Here we are real people asking hard questions. If you think you hear the hum of a fridge or a train in the background, it's because you probably are. We are recording these episodes from the comfort of my home in a small town called LaGrange, Texas.
Today, I connect with Nakia Harris out of Charlotte, North Carolina. She talks about living without parents for most of her life and how God used teen pregnancy to turn her steps in a different direction. She shares reflections on 21 years of marriage, following God into doing the hardest things, race, and a kingdom mindset. Let's dive in. Nakia, how are you today?
Doing wonderful.
Doing wonderfully. Well, it's so good to be with you today. I cannot wait for everyone listening to get to know you more through this conversation. They are really, truly in for a treat. We met when I started my seminary journey at Gordon-Conwell about 2 years now, and you were acting as an advisor for me. You were my student success representative, but really have grown into a mentor and a friend. So give us a glimpse of your life and your day to day.
Oh, thank you, Whitney. Oh boy, my life. So my husband, Chad, and I just celebrated 21 years of April. Yep. And we have 5 children, all young adults with a set of twins. And excuse me, we're semi-empty nesters. So I say that because 3 are still home and 2 live on their own. But the youngest, he is gearing up to move out. So we are helping him.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And we have 1 fur baby, River, who is very spoiled. He's the baby of the house. He is a blue heeler, which is an Australian cattle dog mixed with a boxer.
Oh, yeah. Pretty dog.
Yeah.
Is it a pretty big dog?
He is. He's about 75 pounds.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And he changes a lot. Even last night, my daughter was saying, River, you look tall.
He's like a chameleon dog.
Yeah.
That's funny. Well, so tell us a little bit too about your job and where you are right now.
Oh, yeah. So I work at the seminary full time and I have 2 hats. Well, I probably have more than that, but 2 roles and 2 bosses that I report to. So I support the VP of graduate programs, and which is the administrative side of the seminary. And that's an institutional, the VP is an institutional position, and where we deal with the budgets, implementing and maintaining various master's degree programs, and adhering to accreditation and much, much more. And then my second role is I report to the Director of Digital Education. So basically that is the online courses, which are asynchronous. And the bulk of that department is instructional design. So the team, basically, not so much myself, but they help the professors design their courses for an optimal, you know, student experience and learning outcomes.
That's awesome. It's a lot of like academia knowledge or, you know, verbiage and stuff that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Still is kind of over my head, even though I'm 2 years into the seminary journey.
So but that's awesome. Everything is to help the student. Everything is geared for the student. And, you know, and it's constantly growing and changing, which is really good. So it's not rigid.
Yeah.
You know,
that's awesome. Well, we'll just give a little shout out to anybody who's in grad school as an adult, especially with children or career or any of those things, because in a family, it's a lot. It's a lot to maintain. And so, but you know, we've talked a lot about just how the process of learning is something that we should pursue throughout our lives as disciples of Christ, regardless of if it's through the form of seminary or, you know, wherever it is, but we always need to be learning. And so, I'm excited. We'll talk a little bit more about seminary, but, first I just want to, you know, say that one of my hopes with this podcast is that in sharing our personal stories, folks are drawn in, they're encouraged, they're reminded of the goodness of God. And your story is one of those that so moved me when you first shared it. So why don't you just start by taking us back to your early life and your growing up years?
Yeah. So my sister and I, we were raised by my mother's parents. My mother died when I was 8. She died in March 1985. Yeah, I was 8. My sister was 10. And that was a big blow to the family. My mother was greatly loved. She was the oldest of 3 girls. We lived with our grandparents most of the time. I'll say most of the time. They helped her a lot, right? And so we used to stay with them during the week to go to school before we were in elementary school, right? And then we would go home on the weekends. So it was a matter of living with them now full time. So when we lived with them part time, they were like fun. They were grandparents. Mm-hmm. And then when we lived with them full time, they became our parents.
Right.
So it was a different ball game from there. So I never knew my father. He was very absentee. Until about 3 years, we connected. He actually reached out to me 3 years before he passed away. So we had somewhat of a relationship, but it was mostly superficial.
Yeah.
But it was good to fill in the blanks for some things in my life, you know. So as a result of being angry about not having parents in my life, mom and dad, I became a rebellious teenager, and in every sense of the word, like I was rebellious. I hung out all night. Nobody could tell me what to do because I felt like, well, I don't have parents. So even though, like, I had grandparents,
yeah,
they raised their children. You know, my grandparents, I know they loved me, you know, but they raised their children. They were older. They were in the time of their life where they wanted to travel. They wanted to do some things for themselves, you know? So they always provided, you know, but the emotional connections were absent, you know? And then of course I pulled away. So I said, these old people, they don't know anything.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how it was. So you name it, I just did it. But the funny thing is this, being a rebellious teen actually saved my life. And I say that because I got pregnant with my oldest daughter when I was 17. And I had her 2 weeks before graduating high school, right? So I say she saved my life because I was headed down a path of drugs and God knows what else, right? And I also saw beautiful girls, like our people we hung out with, and, you know, we were friends for a long time. We grew up together. I saw firsthand how drugs can really derail you, how the addiction begins and how it starts out as fun and just something to do and no big deal, you know, let me get high. Let me just giggle all night, you know, whatever. But it took them down some really dark paths. But because I got pregnant, I figured, ooh, I'm now responsible for someone else. And although I don't know what I'm doing, I feel like I need to give this little person a chance, you know? So I just turned another way and said, okay, let me finish my studies. I graduated on time. And, you know, I went to college because I thought that's what you're supposed to do. And also I didn't want to be a statistic. You know, it was a volatile relationship with her father and abusive relationship as well. And I stayed way too long in it because 2 kids later, that's when I woke up and said, oh no, this must not be good for me. You know?
Right.
But when you're wrapped up in low self-esteem, going back to not having emotional connections with grandparents, no parents, you know, all of that, and trying to figure it out for yourself, you know, sometimes
not having an example of even what it should look like and
exactly.
Just, yeah. Continuing on what you had and all you knew kind of. Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, blazing my own trail, and then, you know, there's hiccups along the way because, you know, being so young, you don't know anything.
Yeah.
And yeah. You think you know everything.
Yeah. So how did you view God during this time, and what eventually drew you to him?
So I always had reverence for God, right? And I grew up in church. So my sister and I were in church ever since we can remember, right? But we were just there. You know, we didn't absorb anything. I was told at a very young age that children do not hear from the Lord. God only speaks to the pastor. And you follow what the pastor does.
Oh, wow.
So for me, I said, well, what's the point? Why am I even here in church? And why do I have to do these things if I felt like God always spoke to me, but they told me no. And I believed them. I felt like, okay, they're older than me. They should know, you know? So I think I viewed God as similar to my father and my grandfather, authoritative, big mean guy in the sky, you know, type of thing. And even maybe absent, you know? So when I was in church, and even when I was maybe around 10, 12 years old, I used to feel the pull of the Lord, which I know what that is now. But at that time, I was like, what is this? And what's going on? But I would always push it off and couldn't wait to get to the next thing.
Yeah.
Get out of here so I can go down the street and get some candy and then go hang out with my friends, you know?
Yeah.
That type of thing. And my grandmother, she passed away 2 years ago. And she had Alzheimer's, and she would always reference the Lord. I love the Lord. I'm waiting on the Lord. Sometimes when I call her, what are you doing, Grandma? I'm just sitting here praising the Lord, you know? But she loved the Lord all her life, but she didn't really teach us about Jesus. You know, she taught us to pray before we eat. And then we would do the now I lay me down to sleep prayers, you know, before we go to bed.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it, you know? And so it wasn't until I got older that when I got my first corporate job, I thought I arrived. You know, I had all my piercings, eyebrow piercing, nose pierced, you know, tattoos weren't that popular at that time, but if they were, I probably would have had tattoos.
That's what, right. You would have gone down that road too. Yeah.
So I thought I arrived. I said, oh, I got to grow up. Let me take 2 kids at this point, right? So finished college, everything, you know. Let me take my piercings out. Let me grow up. Let me climb the corporate ladder. That's what my goal was, right? Everything in my own strength, right? So there were these 2 ladies at my job. One was like a Madea type where, you know, love the Lord, but she's blazing, brazen, and doesn't take any mess from anybody, you know. Comical because that's just the way she lived her life, you know, don't mess with her. And then another lady who was an ordained minister, who is my mother-in-law. So I met my mother-in-law at my first corporate job. So the 2 of them taught me about Jesus.
That's crazy.
And I said, wow. Yeah. You know, I almost say it was like a crash course because I'm learning from both of them, different perspectives and everything like that, and just having a good time. And I'm like, oh, this is not the God that I knew about or I was told about or, you know, that I
had. Why you been holding out on me, everybody? Like, this is the whole different ballgame. Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. Right. So they brought me to Jesus, and I said, well, how can I not give my life? You know what I mean? To this Lord, you know, learning about the real Jesus, right? So I did that. And my mother-in-law, she invited me to church one day. She was going to preach. And I said, okay, I'll come out. And then she was like, I just know that my son is going to want to meet you and everything. And I'm like, I'm a single parent right now. I am not interested in your son.
Don't try to set me up. Yeah.
That's nice, but I'll come to support you.
Right.
But we're going to leave it right there. You know what I mean? Because I just figured at that time, okay, I'm learning about Jesus. So he must be able to teach me how to be a good parent to these children that I'm responsible for. So that was my mission, you know? So then it became less about ambition and climbing the corporate ladder, stepping on people to get my way and money, 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 whatever. And it became more about, okay, no, I really do need to love on these children and raise them right, whatever that looked like, right? Different from the way that I made vows in my life.
Right.
You know, I wanted to be present for them. So went to the church. My husband is a typical PK because he came to church right when church was over. So I met him in the parking lot as church is letting out.
You know? I was here, but defined here. Yeah.
Exactly. So he can tell his mom he went to church. And technically he did.
Yeah. It's not a lie. That's right. So you're leaving and he's coming in.
I'm leaving. He's coming in. My youngest, my first oldest son, he never really paid any mind to men, but he loved the ladies, especially the curly hair and everything like that, you know. So he immediately went to Chad. And I was like taken aback a little bit, like, wait a minute, my son, he doesn't even know you.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But he knows you from somewhere, you know, and, you know, his spirit. You know, his gentle spirit. And we met, talked, and we've been together ever since.
That's awesome. That's awesome. And y'all just celebrated 21 years of marriage.
21 years of marriage.
That's incredible. You have 5 kids and you just celebrated together this huge milestone, which is a big deal. You said we recently went on a marriage kind of retreat trip together, right? So what are some little tidbits or just some wisdom you can share as you guys have been reflecting on 21 years?
Yeah. So I'm going to share the reflection of wisdom, but I got to tell the backstory of it before I get there. So we went on a marriage retreat. So like maintenance, you know, you are married for a long time. There's ebbs and flows. You know, anyone who's been married over 7 to 10 years, I would say you've had some ebbs and flows. And when you invest in your children, you know, they grow up, then you're like, wait a minute, who is this spouse here? So, you know, a time of refreshing and getting to know each other where you are at the present time, right?
Right.
So with the wisdom, I would say, is always date your spouse, period. Like do not compromise that. There are many important things in a marriage, right? And communication is a huge one. And if you fail to date each other, your communication is going to suffer. Mm-hmm. So whether you're just starting out, you don't have any children, make sure you date, and that is a rhythm that does not get interrupted when you do have children. And when you do have children, when you date, do not talk about the children on your date. Let that go. They'll be okay for a few hours. Talk about you, you know, compliment each other on something, you know, find something, you know, your hair looks great today. You know, oh, that shirt looks really nice on you. Anything small, because it goes a long, long way. Mm-hmm. And make those dates purposeful, meaning busy lives. You know, we all know we can talk, me and you, Whit, about busy all day long.
Right.
But schedule it. So if it's once a month, okay. And don't let anything come in between that. And that's going to be the key to success because it then that flows. If you date each other, you're saying, first of all, you're important to me.
Yeah.
And I need you. You are my friend, my confidant, you know, my everything, my lover, you know, and we're going to do this together, right? So when you have those storms, you can weather them better because you're dating and you know each other's heart better.
Yeah.
And then the communication, because when you have good communication, that will help to dispel many misunderstandings, you know. And then you can be as one. So then when you're raising children, that is another thing. You have to be united with your spouse because if the kids get any hint of that, it'll tear you apart.
Yeah.
Yep.
So good.
And they say, you know, the statistics, I haven't looked them up, but I know a lot of times the statistics are for divorce, money or infidelity or something like that. But you can weather those things. And what it comes out of fear and poor communication, not truly knowing each other, meaning melding, because it's a practice to meld basically all your marriage. It's not just like 1 year thing or 2 year thing. You know what I mean? You're constantly melding because you're growing and changing. Each of you is growing and changing. So then you have to keep melding who you are at that moment, you know, in that present moment. So that's the wisdom that I would give.
That's great. That's really good. The word meld, that's like a good imagery word, right? It makes me think of just the process of becoming one as opposed to it happening the day you get married and it's a done deal, but more of like a lifelong process. So
it's kind of like our salvation, right? We're immediately, we accept Jesus, we're saved, we're justified, right? So boom, you got that instantly. So when you get married, you are one, right? You professed it. Then just like, salvation, you're traveling through the sanctification process. Now you're becoming a disciple. Are you turning your heart to become a disciple, right? We talked a little bit about discipleship. So then in your marriage, mirroring that too, you are becoming one. You are one, but you're becoming, continually becoming one.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. That's a really powerful parallel. We'll be back in just a minute after a word from our sponsor.
Today's episode is sponsored by Eric Lehman at Thrivent Financial.
Whitney and I became members with Thrivent a couple of years ago, right before I went skydiving. And then she sent me on a ski trip by myself with some buddies. So I have the feeling that she wanted the life insurance policy just in case things went awry, if you know what I mean. Wink, wink, nod, nod.
Listen, I am married to someone I know is an adventurous spirit who I think you said the other day, if there's not a chance I could die, it's not exciting for me or something along those lines. But back to the ad, okay? So seriously, we really are big fans of Thrivent. Not only does Thrivent offer a range of financial services from, like we talked about, life insurance to retirement plans, they also encourage you to give back to your community through something called action teams.
And through these action teams, they actually provide resources and funds to help you meet needs in your local community. So it's really nice. I am being held hostage right now, so this is a cry for help. Somebody help.
So if you're interested, look into a Thrivent near you at www.thrivent.com.
Help me.
And now back to the conversation.
Nakia, you've shared that you are the, quote, most unlikely candidate for seminary. And I know you just recently got your master's in divinity, which is a huge accomplishment. And you're still in school now for a certificate in lay counseling. But what do you mean by, you know, unlikely candidate for seminary? Talk a little bit about that.
Oh, I can't say I didn't know what seminary was, but I didn't pay attention to seminary. What is seminary? That's where I was. Like, what seminary? I did not know what it ended. That was a thing where I had to look that up. So when I recently got started into, so I think 2016, I was doing vision boards. So I'm sitting with the Lord. Okay, well, what's the vision for the next year, you know? 2017. That's when I started, September 2017. I laugh because, you know, it's a journey, and the MDiv is no joke, you yeah. know. And if I would have known, and I think that's why sometimes with this, it's good to be like a child, you know, because yeah. I would have said, can this come past for me?
Yeah, exactly.
But I didn't know what the MDiv was. So I sat with the Lord and I said, okay, well, what's the vision for 2017? So MDiv popped in my mind. And I was like, well, that must be the Lord, because I don't even know what is an MDiv. All right, sure. Let me, you know, look up a picture, put it on the vision board, tacked it up there because it is there. And it's so funny because I'm not thinking of that to accomplish and achieve. I'm thinking of my stuff to accomplish and achieve, but it was on the vision. And I asked the Lord, okay,
so wow.
that advice. I just always thought that once the kids got older, I would just do a deeper dive with Bible study. That's it. I want to learn a little bit more, so I'll spend more time going deeper, you know, as they finished school and everything like that. The Lord had plans. Plus, when I did my undergrad, and I have my BA in economics, right? So totally different fields. I vowed never to go back to school because that was hard. I just felt like college is not for me. You know what I mean? And that's okay. So I said, oh, okay. So the Lord was laughing. Like, well, how did that work out? So 2017 comes and, you know, there's different things on the vision board that are being accomplished, which is awesome, right? And then we get to the part of the MDiv, like, okay, let's revisit this. I look it up. I'm like, Master of Divinity, still not clicking. What does that mean? What is Master of Divinity? To where when I started school, people said, oh, what is Master of Divinity? And I said, oh, okay, I wasn't the only one, number one, but two, how do I answer that? So I used to just say, I'm mastering my divine nature. And so I had that. That was my answer for a little while. So anyway, we get to August.
Yeah.
And I felt like this pull, going to school. I'm like, where is this coming from? Going to school. Okay. MDiv is on my vision board. Okay. So I said, all right, well, I'm going to school, but seminary? The Lord's leading me. Okay. She's finally getting it. Go to seminary. I said, all right, let me look up seminaries. I looked up a couple of different in Charlotte. I'm like, okay, great. I guess I better go and just, you know, find out more information about them. So I go into Gordon-Conwell. I was like, ooh, this looks intimidating. and everybody in there was just so sweet, so gentle. I felt like they laughed at me like, what is this? She doesn't even know what's going on here. So, but meanwhile, they were just trying to help.
Yeah.
So I have this impromptu interview. The director of admissions just happened to be free. So I'm talking to the director of admissions and I'm like, okay, I'm supposed to go to school. All I know is the Lord told me to go to school. I'm not serving in any ministry capacity. I've always cleaned the church and I was happy to clean the church, actually. You know, I used to pray and, you know, walk around the church, clean. People say, oh, you clean toilets. Somebody has to do it, you know, and it's actually a ministry.
Absolutely.
You know? I've had a lot of divine moments with the Lord with cleaning the church. Mm. So tells me how to fill out the application, do this, do that. And I said, oh, okay, sure. Lord, I'm going to apply, but school starts in like 2 weeks. I just knew I was not going to get enrolled or be accepted or anything, right? So I said, I'll go through the motions, no problem. Still not wanting to go to school. I did everything on application, you know, then you have to have your references and everything like that. Now I'm like, yeah, the people I know, they're busy. So they might not even see the inquiry for 2 weeks. So I'm safe. I'm good. Everybody got their stuff back in a day. One day.
No.
Now I'm sitting there like, no, this is really not happening. Then I said, nope, all is not lost. The classes are going to be full. I'm sure of it, right?
Yeah. You're like hoping for the closed doors, that every door is opening and you are not excited about it.
Not excited. So I get all the paperwork. You've been accepted, all this, all that. You know, most people are very happy. I'm like, great, this is good. Now what am I going to do? So I said, all right, I'll move right along. I go to the campus again and, you know, try to register. I said, I know this is going to be the dead stop here. So I go, they said, oh, we have classes available. What would you like to take? What would I like to take? Oh, no, I have no idea.
I'm not prepared for this. Yeah.
No. So the only thing, they give me this grid of courses, which is all online now. And I'm looking, and it's over my head. I'm just like, I don't even know what these classes mean. So the only thing that really popped out, jumped out off the page, was Greek 1. So I said, all right, I guess I'll take Greek. What else should I take? And then I had to take a writing course or whatever, since I wasn't in school for about 15 years or whatever at this point. So it's like everything stopped, almost like the world stopped, and everybody turned and said, you're going to take Greek? I said, yeah, that's the best. I feel like the Lord is telling me to take Greek. So I'm going to sign up for Greek. I'll sign up for this writing class and we'll just keep it moving. They tried. I mean, different people tried to talk to me. You sure you want to take Greek? You sure you want to take Greek? I don't know if you want to take Greek. You want to take Greek? And I said, yeah, I have to take Greek.
This is like, that's all I knew. Right. Jumping into like an undergrad and being like, I'm going to go straight for like biomedical engineering, like freshman year kind of thing. It's like equivalent, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
They're like, we don't mean to burst your bubble, but yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did that. And I think it was a third class. And I really can't remember what that one was either. But that was my schedule. And yeah, I started there. And the rest is history.
I love this story because it is truly what Christ does when we give him our life, right? Like when we surrender our life to Jesus, he does the impossible things with our life, you know? Because some people might be listening and being like, well, this does not apply to me. I'm never going to do seminary or whatever, but there may be something else that you felt a nudge towards, or, you know, the Spirit leading you towards, but it feels like I'm disqualified from this because of this, or I would never be smart enough to do that, or I don't have the funds for that, or there's no way that everything could line up for this to happen. And I think this story is just a testament to, you know, continuing to do the next right thing in faithful surrender to God and him just guiding you and providing every step of the way, you know, because here you are, and a master's in divinity is 90 hours, right, of graduate level work. And so to go from like, I didn't really like college, I didn't really like school, and then to, okay, God, you're carrying me through this rigorous, intense study is pretty phenomenal. It's like, there's no other explanation other than that.
Yeah. To God be the glory.
Yeah.
I always say that because, and I say that this is his degree because, again, I didn't know what an MDiv was. I went from saying to people, oh, mastering my divine nature, to where sometimes I was hoping they wouldn't even ask, what are you getting your master's in? Because Chad would always say to people, oh, she's in her master's program. So some people would say that's so good, but they assume master's in business because that's what they knew me as, business. I was in real estate. I was in mortgage, you know? So they just assumed the MBA. And I was like, woof, good, because I can't answer those questions. And then when people would ask me, are you going to be a pastor? Mm-hmm. No, you know, and I had to learn that's okay, because then I went back to the Lord, like, you want me to be a pastor? You know, because the MDiv track, that's really what you are preparing for is pastorate. Really, there are so many avenues, but I believe people have shrunk it down to, and not that I'm pastoring is a major thing, so I'm not discounting that, but it's much more, you know. And I knew I wasn't a pastor, and I'm a pastor in the way that the Lord wants me to be a pastor, not the traditional way. So then, you know, then I was able to articulate as I went along the journey, you know.
Yeah.
about the MDiv. And yes, 91 credits to be exact.
91. You're like, yeah, don't leave any, every single one of those hours, painstaking hours, right? Blood, sweat, and tears in that. And I think another good just takeaway as I'm hearing you say this is that, you know, sometimes the Lord calls us to things and he really doesn't reveal the why. You know, the obedience and the faithful steps of following him is what he's calling us to. And, you know, and God is even still, you know, making clear to you how he's going to use the extent of what you've learned. And, you know, and so it's just pretty powerful to think about. And I think so relevant to anybody listening who might say, like, you know, we want the big answer and kind of like, God, what do you, you know, think like, what do you want for my life? You know, and he's told us, I want you to follow me. You know, I want you to be my disciple. And so follow me in your day to day, be faithful, do what you said you're going to do. You know, and walk with me and I will reveal step by step what's next, you know? So, well, I asked you a couple months back what your experience has been as a Black woman in ministry. And you talked a lot about identity and where you put your focus. So I'd love for you to share more of your thoughts on this.
Sure. Yeah. So I think of myself first as kingdom citizen. So my identity is totally in Christ, right? And so I'm like, okay, that's where I am. So I'm kingdom first before I am woman, before I'm a Black woman, you know? And so that's where my heart is. That's how I view life, you know, to where I think sometimes, it could be misunderstood that I'm not in tune or in touch with, you know, today's woes and today's, you know, issues, they're not new. You know, they've been here since some of them constructed over time or whatever, but some of these are problems that will never be solved. So I don't put my focus on that. I put my focus on people. You know, the Lord says that we're to love God with everything, all our whole being, right? And then love people, love his people. And so on a day to day, we have to learn, what does that really look like, you know, in our journey of discipleship?
Right.
And so that's how I view things. That's where my heart is, you know. And I've been asked a few times, have I experienced discrimination in seminary? There are many types of discrimination. And I always have to pause and think about it. And I'm like, one of the biggest things, like in seminary, I'll say that I felt discrimination on was when I was brand new in first starting out in seminary, first semester, second semester, there were elites. And when I say elites, meaning they had been in seminary for a little bit, they were also in ministry and, you know, on boards of their churches and things like that. So they were very well seasoned, right? And me being so new and green, if you will, when we had groups, it was almost as if they were like, you sit here while we do the work, you know? So I had those academia, discrimination. I hear a lot about discrimination against women. And so just seeing some of those things, you know, it's heartbreaking to, you know, but there's hope.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I don't look for discriminatory practices. So yeah. I don't believe I find them.
Because it's not where your focus or your eyes are. You're not honing in on those things first and foremost. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't want that to sound crass or anything like that, or, you know, but I look for opportunities to love people. And that may sound cliche as well, but that is the truth. I look for opportunities for community. I look for opportunities to better, you know, someone else's journey, especially that's why, you know, I look to stay at the seminary because mm-hmm. when I was a student, I needed help. So
absolutely,
someone else needs help too. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that's where a lot of my focus is.
Yeah. And I think it's a great reminder when you talked about just some of the academic discrimination. I think that that happens in all kinds of circles, definitely in church circles, where there's a sense of like, this person is really accomplished and impressive and knows more. And these kind of maybe unintentionally gaps can kind of form these chasms between people where it feels like you're a new, like you said, green. There's this kind of a hierarchy or a looking down on, or, you yeah. know, so, it's interesting to hear you share just again, coming in and being like, I don't know, you know, what I'm doing. And I'm really new to a lot of this and to kind of feel some of that. And, I think it's challenging and eye-opening to think about if you're a Christian who's been in a circle and maybe you're very established or kind of, you know, have been in certain roles for, years, that's not a bad thing, you know? Right. But don't allow it to be something that, elevates you to a place of, you know, prideful distance from right. connecting humbly and seeing the value that, you know, you had things to bring to the conversation just as much as, you know, somebody who had been in those conversations for 27 years, you know? And so it's one of our core values in Woven is to be postured in humility. And it's so hard because our ego is so real, you know, like mm-hmm. our ego is a real mm-hmm. thing. And so, you know, it's like, you could get to the place then of being like, well, now I have a master's in divinity and now I'm no longer the green person. I'm the person that's got the credentials, you know, and use that as almost like a, again, something that is a elite marker on you. You know what I mean? And I know that is not your heart and that's why you're saying, you know, you want to continue to serve in the way that you do, you know, and bring in new people like me, like you did. So, I would love to just close, because we kind of touched on all kinds of things and this has been so good and you have so much wisdom and I just love your raw honesty and just your candidness. And so thank you for everything you've shared, but I would love to just, close because you are such an encourager. So if anybody is listening, who's, you know, feeling, disqualified or feeling mm-hmm. like, I could never do blank, or, you know, this is an impossible, you know, dream that God's placed on my heart. What would you say to that person? It could be about education or something totally unrelated. What would you say to that person?
Wow. Well, one, I would say, yes, you can. Mm. You can do what you put your mind to for sure. It may feel like it, like I don't have the resources. I can't do it. I don't have the strength. Mm-hmm. The first thing is our default has to be going back to the Lord mm-hmm. and sitting down and asking him, what would you like me to do? If you are getting feelings of going back to school or, you know, getting some more education or starting a business, anything, sit with the Lord and ask him, what is this something that I should pursue?
Yeah.
And if you get a green light, if you get, you know, I'm drawn to it. I'm drawn to go take this class at XYZ seminary. When you have your community of people, you know, your trusted leaders or your trusted community, you know, talk about it. Now you start the stages of talking about it, asking questions, fact finding, digging. Because what happens is that starts to normalize it. So when you mm-hmm. start normalizing something, you become more comfortable with it. Hmm. You may not have it all together. You may still be shaky in it, or I don't even know where to start. Someone will always have the answer that you yeah. need because the Lord works through all of us, right?
Yeah.
And so they're going to give you that direction to say, oh, maybe speak to someone over here.
Yeah.
And they will provide you with some information. Mm-hmm. Now you're going a little step further, a step further, a step further. Mm-hmm. So even if you're scared, and I'm learning yeah. this myself, I am practicing because even in obedience, it's a practice,
yeah.
you know, you take the step. And I always, my whole degree, my whole 5.5 years, my whole life, but with the MDiv, I said, Lord, this is your degree. You sent me here. In my mind, I quit 27 times. I can't do this. I'm done. I can't measure up. You name it. And I said, but wait a second. You sent me here. You're the one that has to maintain it.
Yeah.
Show me how. And every single time you showed me how. There was even one paper I'll share real quick. I don't want to take up too much time. Exegesis paper. You can go on and on. I feel like they don't have an end. you could write them for the rest of your life, right? So this one particular night, I am up until 3 a.m. stressing over this exegesis paper. I'm like, oh my goodness. I said, Lord, and I'm crying out, Lord, 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 help me, help me. He said, are you doing it for the grade or are you doing it for me? That was it. I said, okay, conclusion. Boom. Let me get everything together. And I submitted the paper.
Amen. Wow.
That was it. I got a B plus or something like that on the paper. But yeah, I was striving for an A. And so I was trying to make it perfect for what would the professor want. And
this, that, that. Yeah.
And so soon as that sealed the deal for me.
Yeah. And it just like lifted all the, you know, muddiness. It just made it all clear. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. And I think that all of what you shared, and you even spoke it to me, actually. I remember when I first connected with you, when I was starting my seminary journey. Because again, everybody listening might be like, this is not, you know, think outside of seminary, but specifically like doing hard things that God has placed on your heart. They are still hard. It does not make them easy. But I remember you saying like, if God has called you to this, then he will provide, and continue to ask him to provide, to strengthen you, to equip you, to help you have the time, to help you have the energy, you know? And so I remember you encouraging me in that. And so I think about how, if God is Jehovah Jireh, he is our provider. That doesn't just mean that he helps put food on the table or water that we need. It means that through his Holy Spirit, he has provided, and he continues day in and day out, moment by moment, providing. And it's what he loves to do as our Father, you know? So such a powerful word, and we could keep talking. I've loved this conversation and just love you. Thank you so much for being here today, Nikia. It's been so wonderful.
In keeping with our theme of organizational leadership.
Wait, did you just have a little bit of a lisp there? In keeping with us, no.
Our theme.
I don't know. It just sounded like your voice did something different.
Like, I don't think so.
Okay. Maybe it didn't.
I don't have a lisp. What are you talking about?
I actually really like the sound of a lisp. I'm not going to lie. Like, I think it's very endearing when people have lisps. I really do. I'm not joking.
Well, maybe I'll change my speech just so you think I'm more endearing.
No, that would be weird. Okay. No, don't change. Don't change your voice.
In keeping with our theme of organizational leadership, how do you respond to criticisms to your ministry or about your ministry?
I think this is hard because, you know, I don't think you always have them to your face. That does happen too sometimes. But sometimes, you know, you just kind of hear about it through the grapevine, or just a fraction of it comes back to you in a weird kind of awkward or hurtful way or something. You know, I think there have been times when I've definitely handled this really poorly, where, you know, somebody's brought something to me and I've been unable to receive it as like the leader of an organization. And I've, I don't know, like taken it and processed it as a friend or a person that is insecure and has feelings and can get offended. You know, this happened just, I don't know, recently, where there was somebody that brought some things to me and I kind of had to just
I don't know, kind of like separate myself from their approach and like the way that they were saying some of the things, and try to just hear the meat of what they were saying and take it, you know, and again, kind of process it through the filter and see it as an opportunity for growth that maybe I hadn't thought of, you know, but then not linger on it too long and like soak it up and, you know, and kind of mope around and make it all about me, you know, because I feel like on one hand, if you're a leader that's like really kind of callous and insensitive, then you can distance yourself from, you know, people's concerns or hurts or frustrations or whatever. And I think I can see why people do that sometimes, because it feels safer and it's maybe less vulnerable. But then on the other side of that, if you become like so kind of enmeshed emotionally, then everything really is, you feel like it's a reflection of you. I mean, maybe we see this in parenting where if our kid fails at something or, you know, makes a terrible decision, then it feels somehow like this reflection on us. And I think I can feel the same way sometimes about something in Woven. If somebody has a really bad experience or, you know, walks away with a bad taste in their mouth, even if I wasn't even a part of that interchange, then I can feel responsible. And to some extent, I should feel responsible, be willing to ask myself, is there anything that I could have done better as an organizational leader and that we need to look at moving forward? Are there some things here that are blind spots? Are there some growth areas of being a new organization and, you know, we didn't even see that coming, or how we would handle that? Or, but I do think that I've had to, in order to build an organization that really seeks out feedback and intentionally takes in thoughtful words from your people, from your constituents, I've had to separate myself more and more from feedback being personal and allowing it to hurt me and taking it so much to heart that it discourages me from doing the work and continuing to do the work. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, you know, just recently, well, over the course of this spring, I guess there have been like three different opportunities for seeking feedback after the retreat. We sent out a survey for that after a recent John Bible study that I had written and kind of led through for about 5 weeks. And then also for volunteers. And so each of those were just different opportunities to gather and collect and just invite honest feedback. And for me, it was really, really, really good, you know, actually just to, they were all anonymous. And so that was intentional, except actually the volunteer one was not, because a lot of it had to do with questions about, you know, that person's, you know, role or ways they've served and just moving forward. And we're just, you know, basically being nosy and stalking. So but I mean, to the extent that it was possible, we wanted to make it, you know, fully anonymous so that people felt like I can be honest about these things. And then after every event as a leadership team, there's six ladies that we meet and just debrief and do what's called, we call a plus delta, you know, of just what went well. Let's really highlight the celebrations. And then what are things that we need to improve in, or growth areas, or things that maybe were blind spots that we didn't see, or just things that you've heard could be better. And so I will say that I think that the extent to which someone is involved and, you know, a part of the organization, it does affect the extent to which I will really take that criticism to heart. You know, if that person comes to one thing and maybe leaves early and, you know, is there for 5 hours and has never come to anything else, and maybe because of one conversation they have with one person, they have a bad taste in their mouth and they are upset about that.
That's going to be weighted differently than someone.
Exactly. And it doesn't mean involved. That their, you know, experience is false or that it's not valued. But, you know, if there's somebody who's been a volunteer and has served in different roles, or even just somebody who's participated in different activities over several years, and or even over one entire year, you know, but not just shown up once for a part of something, then yeah, those are things that I process a little bit differently, because again, they've probably seen multiple angles and maybe they're more inclined to see patterns or unhealthy things, you know. And so I can think of one
interaction that I had with somebody this year where they wanted to talk about some things. And, you know, I think I was kind of blindsided by it. And I know in this interaction, in this meeting, that I was very tired and I probably shouldn't have even been meeting with anybody because I was coming off of just a trip and a lot of heavy things. And in that meeting, and I just got really kind of emotional and a little defensive. And looking back on that, I've thought, you know, I think had I been in a different emotional place, I probably would have processed that a lot differently, because I don't think that this person's approach was bad or that they had bad things to say. I think it was just hard for me to hear in the emotional state that I was in, because I was kind of worn down, you know? And so I wasn't able to filter it in a healthy way. I was doing, you know, what I mentioned earlier of kind of taking it more personally and making it more about me than it was about, you know, helpful feedback for the organization, you know?
Yeah. And I see criticism, especially at the organizational level, kind of on a spectrum. At one end, you can disagree and almost write off the entire criticism because you don't agree with the person.
Mm-hmm.
On the other end, you can be so apologetic and...
Right. Try to overcompensate for it, kind of.
Yeah, trying just to win the person back and gain their approval.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think either of those ends of the spectrum are the healthiest place to be.
Mm-hmm.
I think the truth actually falls somewhere in the middle of empathizing with what they see, the dysfunction that they see or the frustration or tension that they see, but also maybe giving them some perspective into why it is the way that it is and then collaboratively, how can we partner on moving forward and making it closer to what you think might be more advantageous, but that also fits within the goals and the core values of the organization. So I think it's a little bit of both.
Yeah. No, I definitely think so. I think, again, like if somebody comes to a Bible study one time and, you know, they leave and through the grapevine, I hear, oh, well, they left because, you know, it was too much work or, you know, they didn't love that first meeting. Then I also have the counter question of like, how much do we cater that? And how much do we cater to that? And how much, you know, do we need to just continue to stay faithful to the mission and continuing to strive to do the best. And because again, if that's not, sometimes that's not even a conversation. It's like a heard through the grapevine type of a situation. And then you really can't do a lot with that, you know? And so I actually really value when people do come to me and say, hey, can I have a conversation with you about this? You know, initially I might feel like, oh man, you know, like discouraged. But then if I'm kind of able to like mentally prepare for, hey, this is going to be, you know, maybe a harder conversation, but probably bring about some really good things. I prefer that over not knowing and that person kind of avoiding or just acting like there's nothing going on, you know?
So where do you turn for insight and advice about those critiques?
Well, it's helpful. I mean, it's part of why a board is helpful, right? And needed. You know, sometimes I've even, you know, come to you and I'm like, hey, this so-and-so came to me with this. How would you filter this? And what am I not seeing? Because I think even though you care about me, I think you're a more logical processor in terms of being able to hear and kind of, you know, cut through maybe the fluff of being offended or something like that, or letting emotion cloud my vision and kind of be able to say, well, what do you think is true here? You know, what is true and what is not true? What are some things that maybe you heard that you should listen to, you know? And, so I think that's helpful, because I, you know, would rather have that than you just kind of making me feel better, you know, like, oh no, you're doing amazing and everything is perfect. And, you know, like, no, like that's not helpful. It feels better in the moment, but it's actually not helpful in like moving in a certain direction, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, this was really just a long way to say that I have some major critiques and concerns about your ministry that I need to share right after this.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Let's talk about that.
To find show notes for this and past episodes, or to engage on a deeper level, you can go to wovenministry.com/podcast. If you enjoy what you hear so far, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It helps listeners find and share this feed. If you'd like to tell us what you enjoyed about this podcast or ask your hard question, you can call us at 512-815-2446. That's 512-815-2446. You'll simply leave a voicemail with what's on your mind, and we might just include your voice on a future episode. Music and editing for the show is by Callan Brown. Recording and production by Tim Scarborough. I'm Whitney Scarborough, and we'll be back here with more very soon. Thanks for listening.